now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Good news and bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Ah! See, a United States astro robot becomes a creature of death. Oh.
And Dave.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the House of Pain.
Back to the House of Pain.
Hello everyone and welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-movie podcast from classic cults and all the cheese in between. The movies are B, the entertainment is grade A, and I'm your host, Jason Giaconetti, and this time I'm going back to 1959 for The Man Who Could Cheat Death, yes, a Hammer movie, and I'll get to it right after this.
Look at this man who must kill to live. He is 104 years old.
Your eyes. What's wrong with your eyes?
Yes, look at him well. This thief of time, this man who could cheat death, who knows the secret of immortality.
I've been taking this fluid every 6 hours now. It's madness. It is what keeps me alive. So you see, you must. You know what will happen if you don't.
Yes, you will die.
Liar. Cheat. Murderer. Offender against nature and God. See the liquid that cheats death. See what he steals from the tissues of his victims so that he may never grow old and never die.
No, no. No, don't do it.
Anton Differing is the man trapped by his own fearful invention. Hazel Court, the girl who knows his love, but not his shocking secret.
For sure, I love you so much.
Christopher Lee, the doctor who gleans the monstrous truth and must submit to blackmail to save the girl he loves.
If you perform this operation and perform it successfully, I shall release her. If you don't perform this operation, or if anything should happen to me while you're operating, Jeanine will not be seen by you or anyone else again.
The Man Who Could Cheat Death was released in the U.S. in June of 1959. November 30th, actually, in the U.K., with an 83-minute running time. Your director here is none other than Terence Fisher. Now, this is a Hammer movie, so Terence Fisher, the guy. So, if he's going to do the directing, who should write it? But Jimmy Sangster, right. Based on The Man in the Half Moon Street, which was by Barre Landon. Your producer, of course, had to be Michael Karras. Okay, so look, it's Terence Fisher directing. It's Jimmy Sangster screenplay. It's produced by Michael Karras. Yeah, so we're talking about, like, you got everyone going. And who's in it? Christopher Lee's in it. Now, he plays the good guy this time instead of the bad guy. And Hazel Court, who, you know, Hazel Court, right? And then some other people you don't really know. Well, you may not. I shouldn't say you should, and not that you don't know. I shouldn't say that. These are people who are not the normal. You know, it's not like the same people you always see. Anton Differing plays your. He's the doctor. He's the main doctor here. Then you have Arnold Marie, Delphi Lawrence, and Francis Day Wolf. Your cinematographer was Jack Asher. Your editor, John Dunsford. Music by Richard Bennett. Hammer Film Productions. Distribution by Paramount Pictures. Cats and Dogs Living Together. Distribution wise, it was distributed obviously in the UK and the US by Paramount. The film was screened obviously prior to its release. As we said, it would hit the London Trade Show June 5th, 1959. General release was the 30th of November, 1959. It actually played on a double bill with The Evil That Is Eve from 1957, but it got a general release in the U.S. opening sometime around August 19th, 1959. It was shown in theaters into the 60s, for example. It was on a triple bill with The Black Orchard from 58 and Macarboro from 59, like the Mount Lebanon Drive-In in Lebanon, PA. 2 years later, the movie continued to be the part of a double bill. On May 7th in 65, it actually ran as the second film behind Dr. Terror's House of Horrors, a movie we love, out in San Francisco. So this movie kind of hung on. It has a great name. I think that's the thing. The Man Who Could Cheat Death. Man, that's a great name. And the poster's nothing spectacular, but it's still got a great, great name. It actually was, and this is funny, because it's based on a short story, but the screenplay was actually rewritten into a paperback novel sold in 59 for like 35 cents. It was designed to be just like real cheap kind of thing. But anyway, let's get to the plot here. We're in Paris, France in 1890, and Dr. Georges Bonnet, a doctor and hobbyist sculptor, abruptly ends the fashionable party he is hosting, right? So he's hosting this party. George harbors a secret. Though he appears to be in his mid-30s, he's actually 104 years old and has kept his youth and vitality through parathyroid gland transplants every 10 years. So, okay, that's kind of like, this plot's kind of like jambled together. But yeah, so we open, he's at a party, and then we clearly see who the young lady who he's been sculpting, who's this beautiful blonde, and then Hazel Court walks in with Christopher Lee, and you're like, bro, people just got here, right, kind of thing, and you're, you know, but obviously that's his, you can tell there's a relationship there. Turns out it's his old lover who he left, when he had to leave Italy. There's a lot of story there. Anyway, we'll get to it. Right. Professor Ludwig Weiss, of Vienna, co-discoverer of the anti-aging process, is 3 weeks late in arriving to George's home to prepare the latest transplant. As a result, George must drink a steaming green elixir every 6 hours to stay young, though the elixir only buys him 4 weeks without the transplant. When George's last model, Margot Philippe, comes across George drinking the fluid, he strikes her down. And as he starts to turn, he turns green, right, kind of thing. It's weird. There's not a lot of makeup effects in this. Like, there's at the end there as he turns old age makeup. But there's not a ton of makeup in here. There's not like a lot of like, wow, what a great makeup effect. Or, wow, that's a real monster. The monster here, I think, is the idea that you want to live forever. I mean, it's obviously a man. I mean, we all know man is the worst monster in the world, right? But, you know, kind of thing. So there's not a lot of like, oh, look at that cool special effect. Look at that cool makeup. It's not like, you know, a Frankenstein's monster or Dracula or the mummy, you know, kind of thing. Where were we here? When the 89-year-old Ludwig finally arrives, he reveals that he is unable to perform the operation because he had a stroke and incapacitates his right hand. Ludwig instructs George to find another surgeon. The Sûreté inspector, so the French, you know, inspector, not Inspector Clouseau, but in this case, Inspector Lagrarisse, begins to investigate Margot's disappearance and arrives at a dinner party hosted by George for Jeanine Desbois, a former lover, that's the one who was with Christopher Lee before, who is playing Dr. Pierre Gerard. George denies knowing Margot's whereabouts, and when Lagrarisse asked to see the bust of Margot, he tells me he actually destroyed it that morning. Lagrarisse leaves, and George admits that he is startled, his guess that he has lied. The police would probably damage the bust if turned over to them, and he secretly, Ludwig convinces Pierre to perform the transplant surgery, claiming that George is deathly ill and urgent need of the treatment. Now, the removal of this gland is not a normal surgery, so you can understand why, being a man of, in this case, of high, moral standard, that Christopher Lee's character, which is, Pierre Gerard, does not want to actually, perform the surgery, but he's being kind of pressured into it. After Janine and Pierre Lee have left, Ludwig tells George that Pierre will operate. However, Ludwig has grown suspicious of George and says it is strange that this is his third of George's models who have gone missing around the time of his transplants. Ludwig discovers that the newest parathyroid gland is from a living person instead of revitalized from a corpse. When Ludwig confronts George that his actions are unjustified, George retorts that he has revitalized four glands from corpses, but they all died because Ludwig was late, adding to George's hatred of being alone in this world. Ludwig destroys the elixir to prevent George from continuing, and George strangles Ludwig to death. Pierre arrives the following morning to perform the operation, but George tells him that Ludwig was unexpectedly called back to Vienna. Pierre refuses to carry out and suggests that George finds another surgeon. George visits other surgeons in Paris to no avail. Meanwhile, Lagrisse tells Pierre of the disappearance of three young women at 10-year intervals in London, San Francisco, and Bern, Switzerland, and that each modeled for a sculptor who was a doctor but disappeared at the same time as the model. While Margot also missing, Lagrisse believes Georges is responsible for the disappearance, but Pierre doubts him, since that would place him in his 60s at least. George takes Janine to a storeroom, which holds the sculpture, and proudly shows her the first figure he made as a boy at age 12. The figure is dated 1798. Janine laughs and says the date must be incorrect, because if it weren't, George would be 104 years old. George Buffy leaves, locking Janine in the storeroom. He then goes to Pierre and tells him that he and Ludwig discovered the secret of a perpetual life decades earlier, but he can't reveal the secret to the world because everyone could live forever. Paradoxically, everyone would eventually die without a fresh supply of new parathyroid glands. Pierre again refuses to perform the planned transplant, but relents when George threatens Janine's life. Janine finds the mentally insane Margot imprisoned in the storeroom. That night, Pierre fakes the operation by making the incision at George's waist, but not transplanting the gland. George rushes to the storeroom as Pierre and Lagrisse follow. George tells Janine that the same operation will allow her to live forever, always young and beautiful, and live alongside him. She refuses. Suddenly, George begins aging rapidly and realizes that Pierre did not perform the operation. As he exclaims he's dying, Margot throws an oil lamp on him, setting the storeroom ablaze. Pierre and Lagrisse rescue Janine, and George's and Margot die in the flames. Yes, it's a Hammer movie, so there's a lot of like British stuff and I know it's Paris, but it's a lot of British stuff the way that it's all like shot and stuff, which is how we describe our Hammer movies. I love Hammer movies. Some of you know that, some of you don't, but now you all do. And yes, it's a bunch of talking. Yes, there's a bunch of like stuff going on, and there's not a lot of a ton of action, but that's not what this movie's about. This movie's about the story and about character study and all that part of it. And I enjoyed it. I definitely did. I haven't seen this movie in years. And what I watched was the Vinegar Syndrome 4K release. Now I watched the international nude version, which had scenes of Hazel Court's breast exposed when she's being sculpted, which were cut, of course, from the US release. And supposedly there's more violence in the end sequence, but I don't remember there being that much difference. It's been years since I've seen the film originally, but I don't remember there being a ton more violence in that part. It says there is. There must be. Okay. I can tell you now, it looks nice and clean. It's the cleanest it's ever looked. Much better than probably watching it on a VHS or on TV or even a DVD. It's probably a DVD. I probably watched it on DVD years ago. And as great as DVDs were, as a step up from VHS and how they were cleaned up, it's amazing how things go to Blu-ray to 4K and watching here. Obviously, the limitation being your eyes can only see so great. It's a good movie. It's enjoyable. It's certainly not my favorite Hammer movie of all time. And it's probably not even my top 10. It actually reminds me a lot of Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde, which I talked about with Luke back in January. that movie was much more violent, and that movie is much more like that Hammer sleazy feel. This felt more kind of subdued. This is why this is 59, you know, kind of thing. And instead of like in the 70s, like when Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde came out, which when they were really kind of like, you know, putting the sex and the drugs and stuff on display. You know, it's good. It's very much like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. It kind of steals from the picture of Dorian Gray a little bit. Obviously, we said it's based on its own short story. It's interesting. It's worth the watch. I mean, I enjoyed it. I picked it up when Vinegar Syndrome was doing their blowouts, when they were blowing out a whole bunch of like, they sometimes would blow out their regular edition Blu-rays and 4Ks and stuff during their annual sale. And I definitely picked this up for real cheap during that time. Not that it's not worth picking up. It's just that, like, why would I want to pay $35 for a 4K when I can pay $7 for it? I mean, it's the exact same thing. It's just, you know, it's just, I just got to wait a couple months. It's not like I needed to see this day of. But yeah, do you remember this movie? I mean, it's, again, it played in the drive-ins and stuff. And if you're of a certain age, you might remember being in the drive-ins in the early 60s and stuff. It would make you, you know, a skosh older than me, but still, you know, totally able to enjoy it stuff. Do you remember seeing this anywhere? Do you remember picking this up when it came out on DVD? I'd love to hear from you. Again, a lesser known Hammer movie, but definitely a movie with a great title. The Man Who Could Cheat Death. It's just a great, great title. So, you know, hopefully you enjoyed this episode, folks. I want to thank everyone for all the likes and the support. Obviously, we're smack dab in the middle of the summer here. The temperature is hot outside. You know that next up is going to be, we're going back to camp. We're going to camp next, guy. We're going Friday 13th, part 7, Jason versus Carrie. I know they call her Tina, but it's Carrie. And Carrie's like my favorite thing ever. I have her tattooed on my leg. I have Jason Voorhees tattooed on my arm. So you know I love part 7. So. All right, folks. So, yeah, you have any thoughts about The Man Who Could Cheat Death? Let me hear them. I'd love to hear from you guys. Love the feedback. Thank you for all support and all the, you know, you guys have been great. And thank you for all the downloads and listens. It keeps this going. So, like we say here, keep those cards and letters coming and keep watching the skies.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots Bugs Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc., are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!
Will you stop?